You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Jessica Hopkins, toku ingoa, no mai haere mai ki te Wire. Mō tēnā rā, kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rahina Monday. I'm your host, Jessica, and I'll be with you for the next hour. I'm also joined in the studio by our producers, Caden and Nicholas, who have some really, really interesting pieces lined up for you today. E whai aki nei, coming up on the show, I speak to Axe Karen Chaw about the government banning TikTok from all parliamentary devices, and also the government reprioritising its spending to refocus on the cost of living and Cyclone Gabrielle recovery. Hannah speaks to Te Pāti Māori's Takutai Kemp about centering Indigenous voices around cyclone adaption policy. Nicholas Lindstorm chats to Tutira Mai Cyclone Relief Concert volunteer Lewis Johnson about that event. Alex Bonham speaks to urban advocate and former Christchurch councillor Mike Davidson about how we can make our cities safer for tamariki. And Caden Tipler reports on the anti-co-governance roadshow in Orewa. He aha o whakaro, I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces, so get in touch, tuku patuhi mai, text in on 5395, or wae mai rane, give us a call in the studio on 309-3879. Ka awa e wariwari, e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo, ki ene kōrero, anohi pakihiri roki roki mā runga, e te pai tuku tuku, o irirangi pōho, me haere ki 95BFM, ira kati.com. Catch all these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Karen Chaw.
For our weekly chat, I spoke to ACT MP Karen Chaw about the government banning TikTok from all Parliament-issued devices, as well as its decision to reprioritise its spending to refocus on the cost of living and Cyclone Gabrielle recovery. Here is that interview. The government has banned TikTok, which is a popular video sharing platform owned by the Chinese company ByteDance, from all Parliament-issued phones. And this comes after the US, UK and Canada all did the same thing. So what do you make of this decision?
Oh, so this doesn't really affect us at all, because we've actually been using a non-parliamentary device for our TikTok for some time now. So we took the precautions well before the government provided that advice. Any politician or government worker does have the option to go out and buy their own non-parliamentary device if they want to keep using TikTok. But it's really up to parliamentary services, what we can and can't use on a work device. So we actually don't have an issue with this.
So who will this decision mainly affect then?
The only person that I've really seen come out and make a mention of it was the Māori Party in regards to younger people having access, I think it was about. But like I said, they have an option to go out and buy a non-parliamentary device to do this.
The government has cited fears that the Chinese-owned app is a security and privacy risk. Can you explain what some of these fears are and whether or not you think they're justified?
Yeah, look, I don't really go into questioning. They've obviously done their due diligence and that they've put out recommendations, and I don't go into questioning what they're saying. It's a parliamentary device. We just do what we're told with our parliamentary devices. I don't really want to question what they're saying, because it's really their discretion.
What is ACT's then general position on increasing concerns surrounding China's government and potential threats to security here in Aotearoa?
I just think this is decisions that companies and businesses are going to have to make for themselves and take on the advice and take on the precautions if they feel that that's necessary.
China is our largest trading partner. Do you have any concerns around the potential implications of this decision on that relationship?
Yeah, this is something that the government's going to have to have some conversations and be very careful with of how they manage it. But that's something for the government to take on board, and I look forward to hearing what they say about that.
And what do you think about TikTok, Karen? Is it something that you've ever been on or checked out?
No, not really. It's something that my obviously my teenage kids have been on, but I don't have an account myself. It's not something I really got into and really understand myself. But I do know a lot of the younger generation use it quite a bit.
And the government also announced last week that it would be reprioritising its spending to refocus on particularly the cost of living increasing and also recovery from Cyclone Gabrielle. And ACT has consistently called on the government to reduce its spending. Would you say that Chris Hipkins has made a good decision here?
Yeah, there's certain things that we have to reduce our spending on, but there's other things that we need to concentrate on too with the cost of living. And we've looked at some of the things that the government's done recently, like increasing benefits to inflation and increasing minimum wage and things like that. But there's a lot of New Zealanders that are struggling right now through the cost of living crisis. And the only people that this government seems to have helped is 2.9% of workers who are on minimum wage and beneficiaries. And where's the help for the other 98% of people who are doing it tough right now? So we really need to be careful. It sounds good, but everyone is suffering right now. And we're calling for, we're calling for tax cuts for low to middle income workers so that their wages can keep up with inflation. I mean, average wage has only grown by 6.2%. It hasn't kept after tax, and it hasn't kept up with inflation, and people are feeling it.
And one particular area that Hipkins decided to hold back investment on was alcohol sponsorship reform legislation, and health experts have been calling for an evidence-based approach to alcohol sponsorship in order to reduce alcohol harm. And they've cited that 62% of New Zealanders support banning alcohol-related sponsorship at events that people under 18 may attend. Is this something that the ACT Party would support more investment into?
Yeah, this was a debate that was due to sort of been had, and I think Chloe Sprawbrook has a bill that's due to be debated around this. And looking forward to the debate and hearing from different areas on where they're coming from and what they want to see. But at the moment, I think the government is saying that if they did go through with this, that it would have a cost of living effect on the average New Zealander who wants to get involved in those kind of sports. And so we really need to be looking at the unintended consequences when we're making decisions. And I think the government has done that in this area.
And something that a lot of people have cited would help people that are struggling during this cost of living crisis is extending the public transport subsidy for longer. And it's already been extended to June. But Hipkins has indicated that with this reprioritisation of spending, that this wouldn't be the case anymore. So what is the ACT Party's thoughts on this public transport extension and these calls to make it more accessible?
Yeah, see, this is the problem when you put in subsidies like this and you keep extending it and extending it and extending it. It's really hard to stop that because people start relying on it. And so we need to find a solution. And some of those solutions are around just the red tape and bureaucracy that's going on within government. And if we just took a step back and started looking at lots of different areas where we can save money, the subsidy has become kind of a permanent thing, and they just keep pushing it on and pushing it on and pushing it on. They need to find a different solution. Just talking about the cyclone legislation that went through with the government and what they're doing to help people in the cyclone areas that have been affected, ACT did support that bill because there were some good things in there, but we're really concerned about the things that are not in there, and we feel that it barely scratches the surface of support that people need in these affected areas. And I'd just like to say that 2 weeks before this legislation came before the House, ACT had 15 urgent solutions for the cyclone rebuild, and one of them was around the ute tax. And these people that are trying to replace their vehicles down in the cyclone affected areas and up north in the cyclone affected areas, they're having to pay this ute tax. And it's getting to the point where they may not be able to replace their vehicles like for like because of this ute tax. And we've made a call that the clean car discount and the clean car standards tax that they're putting on people right now in those areas should be dropped, because people need to get on with it. Farmers need to replace their utes, and people need to start being able to get back to normal life. And we really want this ute tax to be dropped.
And this is one of the areas that Hipkins has indicated would be held back on. What would ACT then propose to reduce emissions from transport?
Well, that's the argument, right? We're not actually increasing emissions into the environment by these guys replacing their vehicles. Their vehicles have been written off. They're no longer being used. So they're just replacing like for like. They're not increasing the emissions into the emissions at all. And New Zealand already has an emissions trading scheme that has a cap. And so even if we didn't do this, there's still that cap there. It's not actually lowering emissions. The problem in the cyclone affected areas is that these people are no longer using those vehicles. They need a vehicle to replace the vehicle that's no longer on the road. So they are not adding to the emissions, and that's what we're talking about.
And that was ACT MP Karen Chaw speaking about the government's decision to ban TikTok from all parliamentary devices and reprioritising its spending.
That was our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Karen Chaw.
The Wire.
I don't know, and frankly the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
A protest against an anti-co-governance speech in Orewa has gained national attention over the weekend. Julian Batchelor has been on tour across the country, sparking frequent protests over his anti-co-governance rhetoric and spread of what critics say is harmful misinformation. I spoke to Summer Huduwaisega, an activist with the Aotearoa Liberation League, about the lead-up to and her impression of the protest.
Yeah, so currently there is a tour happening around the entire country where this person is giving a presentation full of inaccuracies, conspiracy theories, and racist stereotypes about Māori, trying to generate fear over co-governance, and as well just to make money on the side for him because he keeps asking for donations and book sales.
Yeah, and you've been involved in a counter-protest against them. How did the counter-protest come about?
So actually, we ourselves, myself and Pere Huduwaisega, my husband, haven't actually attended any of these protests because we've been in Te Waipounamu. But while we were there, we received a message from our Māori ward councillor, Pere Paniora, to tell us that this tour is happening and asking us to give it energy. And so since then, we've just been helping to create event pages and just spread awareness that this tour is coming to people's town. And honestly, that's all we needed to do. The people in those areas, the mana whenua, the local marae, have all been involved and in leading these protests out themselves.
So the protest in Orewa on Saturday has gotten quite a bit of attention. How do you feel it went? What was the atmosphere like on the day?
Well, from what we've seen from videos, the protest was really well organised by the mana whenua and the local marae. They showed up with signs, songs, and aroha for the people in the room, and they made it clear that there is no room for racism in their town. And I think the protest was a beautiful show of solidarity between mana whenua and tauiwi, who came together in unity. And you saw by what happened with the national anthem, I think it really highlighted where we're at with this current co-governance conversation, showing that they're not actually coming from a good faith criticism of co-governance, of which many of us have. They actually are just trying to remove any Maori governance from the conversation. They want Crown to have full governance over Aotearoa, and they don't want to make any space for Maori to help lead their own people and this country, which is something that's promised under Te Tiriti o Waitangi.
Yeah, it's been an amazing kaupapa to see and to follow online. I think Twitter is where I first saw the footage. But I've also seen criticism that the police, well, I've seen criticism of the way that the police handled the situation. Do you think the police responded fairly?
Oh, absolutely not. I think the police's reaction was disproportional. The way that they made a line in front of peaceful protesters, facing the protesters, it felt really uncomfortable to see that. And it just goes to highlight that the structural racism within our institutions, you know, it's not a surprise to us as activists, because every time we protest, police show up and they are against the protesters. They're there to protect the interests of the property owning class. And so that's what they were doing. And that's run-of-the-mill police work, in my view.
So the people there who were there to hear from Julian Batchelor, there was footage of them yelling, there was footage of them facing up against the counter-protesters. Do you think that has anything to do with Julian Batchelor spreading what some critics have called misinformation?
Absolutely. But I think that we can't just pin this all on Julian. Julian is but a small, silly, you know, he's obviously a grifter. He's and he's an easy one to dismiss as well, because, you know, if you look at his website, it's full of lies and misinformation. In my view, the biggest damage has been happening from more mainstream outlets. I'm talking ACT Party, I'm talking National Party, I'm talking News Talk ZB, The Platform, all of these millionaire-funded platforms that are often on our mainstream media pushing very strongly and relentlessly against co-governance, fear-mongering around Maori governance over this country. And I think that that has, more than anything, inflamed this movement of anti-co-governance and sowed seeds of racism in our country. So yes, Julian, he's an easy one to highlight and point at, but at the end of the day, he's only a small part of a really wide, well-funded movement.
Well, thank you so much for your kōrero on this. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share?
I just want to say that, you know, thank you and to everyone bringing attention to this. And I think it's important that we contextualize what Julian is doing in light of the bigger anti-Māori sentiment that we've been seeing from political parties and media outlets, that we've been seeing, you know, all over the anti-Three Waters campaign. It's the same messaging. It's using the same negative stereotypes. Julian is just helping us to highlight this bigger movement.
I also spoke to Jake Law, a Hibiscus and Bays local board member who was present at the rally in Orewa on Saturday. I asked Jake about the feeling in the room on the day.
You attended the co-governance, or anti-co-governance roadshow in Orewa over the weekend. Can you share a bit about what the atmosphere in that hall was like, and maybe a bit about your experience there?
So I've never seen anything like that in Orewa. It was quite shocking. You know, both sides, it was very tense. I think there were pretty much equal attendees and equal protesters. We were told that only a few police would be there, but quite a few turned up straight away, basically. So they obviously changed their assessment of the risk at that venue last minute. And from my understanding, the protesters were Marae, Ngāti Manuhiri, and other locals who were Pākehā but didn't support this, this tour. And then there were attendees there who were local community members who were wanting to come and listen to the views of Julian Batchelor.
Did you say there was a lot of fear in the room then?
I definitely think
Julian's
comments
are... Or at least a lot of divisive.
I don't want to say what, like, people were feeling, because I don't know that. There was definitely divisiveness. People were yelling at each other. There was a protester who walked up to the stage at the beginning, and there were people in the crowd yelling at them to F off, sit down, shut up. So that out of the gate was the atmosphere. And then, you know, there were other things where protesters were filming the audience, and the audience were yelling at the, you know, so it was very like tense. It was very confrontational. Was there fear? I don't think so. I do think people are afraid of what co-governance might be, and that's part of why, part of what's boosting this tour, because people don't have a misunderstanding, or there's not a lot of understanding about co-governance yet. I think the government needs to actually promote what co-governance really is, so people can have a more robust conversation about it.
Yeah. I guess, what made you want to attend the meeting?
So as a local board member, you know, our public venue being used for something contentious, I wanted to attend and make sure that, you know, the police were doing the right thing. It was safe. I was an observer. I did want to listen to the views of both sides, but I pretty quickly realized that Julian Batchelor does not have a fact-based view on co-governance, so you can discount most of his arguments quite quickly. I was actually more interested in hearing a fact-based criticism of co-governance. He didn't deliver that, and so his discriminatory claims towards Māori was what riled the protesters up so much, because, you know, there's a fine line between free speech and hate speech. I'm a supporter of free speech, but we have to ask ourselves where we draw the line on hate speech or misinformation.
Yeah, so you say Julian Batchelor doesn't have a fact-based view, in your opinion. Do you think Julian Batchelor's roadshow is contributing to the spread of misinformation?
Oh, totally. He just reminds me of the misinformation that was being put out about COVID vaccinations, about the government. He's a conspiracy theorist, and he has a really warped view of the treaty, has a warped view of Māori. He knows nothing about co-governance, actually. And it was interesting that he was asked in another interview to explain what co-governance is, and he couldn't explain it. So I think that about sums it up.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess my final question would just be, tensions were running very high at the meeting, as you have said, but the police have been criticised on social media for their handling of the situation. How did you feel about the police presence at the event?
It was really hard. So I know our marae and the community there quite well. Some of the police officers are members of the marae, and you could see that they were very uncomfortable to be there in that space. And I think it was something that just being in that space was actually something that was challenging for everyone. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
So not an easy one, eh? But the police did their job. I think they did a good job. At the end of the day, that group made that booking. They had a right to make their presentation according to the law. And so the police were there to make sure that they could make their presentation without interruption. Mostly that's what happened. I do think the Q&A at the end was cut off a bit because of the noise in the room. But overall, Julian made his presentation. The police were there to make sure his booking went ahead undisturbed. All of that happened. They couldn't remove protesters really because it's a public venue, it's a public meeting. But then the conflicting thing is that, you know, Julian, a lot of the protesters actually registered for his event, but he was yelling at the police to tell the police to get them out. So that was really quite chaotic, but an interesting, very grey area as well.
Yeah, thank you for your comments on the situation. Is there anything else that you'd like to make a statement on?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think that we need to have a robust, fact-based conversation about co-governance. I welcome criticism of co-governance, but it needs to be coming from a place of truth and fairness. And it'll be interesting to see whether Julian amends his presentations going forward at his other stops on the road show to be a little bit more factual, because I think that'll add weight to his argument. And also I think Julian needs to consider how he might include protesters in asking questions and giving responses to have a more balanced, I guess, view.
That was Summer Huruai-Sega and Jake Law on Saturday's anti-co-governance rally in Orewa. We'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the B.
And- And the winner of the biggest lizard competition goes to Jacob.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe it.
Well, you are totally enormous. What do you have to say?
Oh, this is a dream come true. Oh, I'd like to thank... Hey, what's that in the sky?
Totally enormous extinct dinosaurs are coming to New Zealand for the very first time. And you can win tickets to the show by grabbing your B-card and staying tuned to BFM Drive all this week. 95BFM presents Totally Enormous Extinct Dinosaurs, Saturday, May 6th at the Power Station. Tickets available from Ticketmaster.
A group of emperor penguins huddled close, moving together in synchronized waves. This is Universal Harmony.
Radiating togetherness with positive energy. This is Universal Harmony.
As wholesome as fresh sliced sourdough and as empowering as winning a prize at school assembly. This is Universal Harmony.
Tuesday nights from 10 till midnight are reserved for Universal Harmony with Dr. Snickers, only on 95BFM.
Putting the bubble back in your moe. That's Universal Harmony.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
Last night, Pipitia Madai hosted Tūtira Mai, a relief concert for those affected by Cyclone Gabriel. The fundraiser was a success, raising $40,000 for relief efforts in the Hawke's Bay. I spoke to volunteer Lewis Johnson about the evening's kaupapa and his own experiences of volunteering in the aftermath of Cyclone Gabriel.
We're joined by Lewis Johnson, a volunteer for the Tūtira Mai relief concert for Cyclone Gabriel. Kia ora, Lewis.
Kia ora, my brother Nick.
I just wanted to start by giving you the opportunity to give us a little bit of a whakapapa about yourself and where you stand in relation to the concert.
Kia ora whānau. Ko Lewis Johnson tōku ingoa. Nō rongo mai wahine me te pēki whare ko kāwhungunu. Me rongo whakātua hau. Relief concert just happened last night. Where did I stand on it? I was kind of just floating around, helping out here and there, trying to look slick in their t-shirts, but not really. And a few of the aunties put together the concert and did the organization, so I was just sort of helping out where I could. But, yeah.
Awesome. Such a cool kaupapa. And you were actually on the ground after Cyclone Gabriel for a bit, helping out in the community. Can you tell us a bit what you saw, the aftermath and the effects of the cyclone?
Yeah, my brother and I and our cousin from down here in Wellington drove up to our home in Oamahu, back to the marae. It's just out of Flaxmere in the Hawke's Bay. And the cyclone ripped through pretty handies and the floods were pretty wild. It was because we've got our Ngarirororo Awa just by it. And luckily the marae was all good and everything was pretty safe there. But it was pretty dramatic after effects, eh? The cemetery was all mucked up, silt everywhere, place stank.
Let's touch on a little bit of the efforts that were going in with relief and what kind of work you were doing up there as a volunteer.
Met some superheroes up there. It was pretty interesting to see how the community just comes out when they're in just dire need like that in these emergency situations. And I met some superheroes, some of the local brothers, Rocco, King, these guys just like managing donations and helping people with generators and just moving and organizing stuff straight off the bat, straight after everything fizzed down a bit. And it's some hectic work and these guys have been putting in the mahi. Real grateful for all of their mahi just straight away off the bat, working super hard. And it was pretty awesome. We went up and the first job we did, said what's up. And I think within 10 minutes we're down the road delivering a portaloo to one of the aunties. And then just sort of throughout the rest of the trip, we're helping organize a lot of the donations because Oamahu was lucky enough to be just like a pack and save in the wharekai full of clothes, non-perishable foods and fresh gummies And yeah, it was just like a mean-ass experience.
That's awesome. And talking about those beautiful moments of humanity shining through destruction, and moving on to another instance of humanity, last night you had the Tutiramai Cyclone Relief Concert, Kaupapa, that you volunteered and helped organize. Do you just want to explain a little bit about the Kaupapa, the people that were in support of it, and a little bit of how the night went?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Kind of like we had to we put together a haunga, and just the aunties really pulled it out with their creative musical friends, and they really had the links. Some of the awesome business aunties had the funding links, and then so the creative aunties just got headliners like Troy King and Louis Baker. I was fortunate enough to dap out in the backstage and have a quick yanta, which was pretty slick. Felt very cool, but it was a great time either way. And it was had a bit of a sausage sizzle, selling some merch, and it was just a great night at Pippi Te Marae.
That's awesome.
That's great music, and trying to put some money together for a good cause.
And you mentioned the great acts, so it would be a bit remiss to not go through the list here. You had Troy Kingy, Lewis Baker, Aja, Mata TK, Aotearoa All Stars, Cyan, Amber Holly, Kirsten Tirito, who's an auntie of yours,
yes.
Lisa Tomlins, Rachel Fraser, and DJ Jay Rasick, with MCs Kino Crystal and the Māori Sidesteps, Jamie McCaskill and Regan Taylor. Pretty cool lineup there. Were there any standouts for you that you really enjoyed seeing, or any interesting music acts that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, bro. I reckon they were all pretty awesome, and it was a great vibe all night. But Troy King and Louis Baker, bro, killed it. The aunties ripped it on the stage, and it was all mean, bro. Just such a good vibe. Troy King, he's actually huge, dude. He's a tall guy, but he's ripped. But,
that's awesome. And you said that $40,000 raised for the Kaupapa and for the relief effort is pretty amazing.
Yeah, really proud of the whānau for sure.
And who were the major supporters financially, in terms of, I know you had a couple of sponsors and backing. Was there anyone that you wanted to shout out or give some love to for their support?
We had awesome funding from Te Tauira Whiri and Te Rūnanga o Ngā Tikaho Minu, ki Te Whanganui Atara. We had a lot of awesome, amazing help behind the scenes, and heaps of people that just volunteered and dropped stuff even a day in advance or on the day, which was pretty awesome. Shout outs to Ngā Hauwhawa Paparārangi for the haunga. It was really awesome being part of that. And just had heaps of really cool Vic Uni students, our Māori Tauira, helping out with the chairs, packing up, sit down, all of that. It was really awesome, and we're grateful for everybody.
Such an amazing kaupapa. And just wanted to give you one more opportunity. Did you want to shout out anyone in particular, any friends or whānau that you have that you think deserve a little bit of love?
Shout outs to everyone. It was just such a mean time. And thank you for having me be a part of this. It's been awesome. We're just really grateful for everything, and shout outs to everyone.
And one last question. Do you have any idea how the funds will be used, or is there any way that people can further support the relief efforts?
The funds are going to be sent to Ngā Tikahunganu Iwi Inc. And that's going to be distributed across a lot of the marae throughout Hawke's Bay. Their move with that. Any relief is just hitting those links online, sending whatever you can, and spending whatever time you can in these places and these marae that may need some help, or just if you think you can contribute anything, I'm sure marae and hapu around the North Island would just be stoked.
Nga mahi, Lewis. You've been awesome. Thank you very much for coming on.
That was Lewis Johnson, volunteer for Tutita Mai Relief Concert, a concert that raised $40,000 for relief in the Hawke's Bay. We're going on a little break now, but keep it on the beat.
Music's everywhere. Everywhere. It's like a cloud of art. Here at 95BFM, we've sucked up some of the best contemporary bangers, bottled them and chucked them into a special Spotify playlist just for you. Just for you.
The March playlist is up and features tracks from Crystal Chen, Mr. Ho, Greco Romanc, Office Dog, Tanuki-chan and Unknown Mortal Orchestra.
Follow 95BFM on Spotify for our monthly Spotify playlist and stay au fait.
At this radio station, we do our utmost to abide by the Broadcasting Standards Authority and their rules and guidelines. If you seriously think we've crossed the line on air, give us a call on 309 4831 within 20 working days of the broadcast date and tell us about it. We'll be able to help you out and tell you the procedure if you wish to make a formal complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority. Fuck knuckles, cock and piss. Balls. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Wire. Last week, a boy was run over by a car on his scooter in Christchurch, leaving him critically injured. This is just one of hundreds of road accidents in Aotearoa this year that have seriously injured pedestrians or micro-mobility users. Per capita, Aotearoa has one of the highest rates of driveway and road accidents in the world. Alex Bonham spoke to urban advocate and former Christchurch councillor Mike Davidson about how we can make our cities safer for tamariki.
A boy was injured after being run over by a car in Upper Riccarton. I hope that he's okay. A number of men lifted the car off him, but he was on his scooter at the time. I don't think this is an isolated incident, is it, of kids being hit on the way to school or around town?
No, this is not the first time that I know of an incident with a child being hit while they've been on a scooter. And we've obviously seen a number of incidents where people are being knocked off bikes as well.
Why is it that our stats in New Zealand are just so much worse than in places like Japan or Holland, where kids are able to get out a lot more than they do here?
I think one of it is, our car-centric culture, where we're just focused on driving and getting from A to B as quickly as possible, and we forget there's a lot of other vulnerable road users around that may be on a scooter or a bike or walking. And then two, we actually do put some really good infrastructure on that actually, I guess, encourages more and more people to use those modes of transport. People will just be focused on driving and what's in front of them instead of what's beside them.
I heard Gil Penalosa, who I think is part of the 880 project, talk about child-friendly cities had lots of co-benefits. Have you heard him talk about that?
Yeah, and I'm aware of the 8-80 concept, which I think is what we should all be striving for. And we've got to realise children at 8 are travelling by scooter or bike by themselves a lot of the time. And so councils and cities and towns, they should have a responsibility to provide infrastructure that actually allows them to do that safely, because we all benefit from that. And so it's disappointing when, you know, I've seen it in Otatahi, that the constant backlash we get when we're trying to provide infrastructure that actually makes it much safer for young children to actually get to school or to their friend's place.
It's funny, isn't it? Because people care about their kids so much. The thought of hitting a child on the roads would be devastating for, I think, anyone. And yet, children's needs never seem to come up in conversations with developers or in planning committees. And I wondered what we could do to change that.
Look, I think it's, and I agree with what you're saying, no one ever wants to hurt a person, let alone a child, right? It'd be the worst thing ever. But mistakes happen, and we've seen it too many times. And I just struggle with people's passion on protecting a car park over actually letting people move more safely. And we see it over and over again. And I think we really need to make sure we have this keep having this conversation, keep it in the public domain, and make sure that developers, councils are really focused on providing an infrastructure that allows people, young to old, to actually move around their communities in a more safe environment. And that's from the infrastructure design and the setting of speed limits. Now, I know in Ōtautahi, we've done a lot of speed limit changes where we've reduced the speed limits in neighbourhoods to actually increase safety, and especially around schools. And it's really important that we keep doing that across the whole of the country, because we can't keep having children being hit by motor vehicles.
I mean, this is a debate that's been going on for quite a long time. I think even back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, where I think there were even more traffic accidents on the road than there are now. There was this sort of backlash that said that it's the parents' fault if kids get hit by cars, and it was the parents' duty to make sure they were with them at all times. But that leads to bad outcomes for health and obesity and mental health and opportunities for having joy. I just wondered, do you suppose that there might be any connection between kids not being able to see each other and the state of our roads and active transport?
There's a huge connection. You know, we've seen that with the cycling rates reducing because people were scared to let their children bike to school because of the fear of them being hit. And New Zealand has one of the highest obesity rates. And it's very clear that countries that have low active transport rates have high obesity rates, and the reverse. If you have a high active transport rate, you have low obesity. And a lot of this comes straight down to the fact that people are actually concerned about their safety and well-being when they're doing things like biking. And actually, we as a society have a responsibility to remove that fear. And we have the evidence to show actually how that's done. And it's unbelievable that we have councils or elected members and politicians that are still not allowing this type of progress to happen.
And the kids love it so much too, eh? Just being able to meet their friends and cycle to school together.
I do a lot of biking, and there's nothing better than actually seeing families or groups of kids out there biking, and you know they're biking in a safe environment, and you can see the smiles on their face. And that's where we want all children to have the opportunity to do, not just a few that happen to be close to a cycleway. And so, and I think as a country, we'll become a lot better off for investing in infrastructure that actually works for people from 8 to 80.
That was Alex Bonham speaking to former Christchurch councillor Mike Davidson.
So it's a very odd time to be alive, as they say.
The Wire.
Last in the show, Hannah Thompson speaks to Te Pāti Māori's Takutai Kemp all about Te Pāti Māori's policies for climate adaption and centering Indigenous voices in climate policy debate. Here is that interview.
Starting with Cyclone Gabrielle, Te Pāti Māori has been visiting affected communities in the East Coast. How are they all coping 1 month on from the cyclone?
Let's say, look, the first thing is there is hope. We know that this is a struggling time for our people, for our whānau, our hapū and our iwi in Pikaro, Rāwhiti and Kahununu. We know that within time, as a people, we will come together and continue to work through this. It won't be something that we get through in a month. This is going to take months and years to bring our whenua and our whānau back from the destruction of Cyclone Gabrielle. But hope is high, their spirits are high. Matatini helped with that for those whānau that were able to come and be part of that. For us, that's mana motu hake. That's how we show who we are and how we are and how we can be. And that gives us hope, and that then transforms into going back into those areas to continue the work, the cleanup that are all a part of. This weekend even, we've heard from whānau who are from Gisborne and talk to us about the struggle, talk to us about the loss of marae, the loss of homes. They need all of us, you know, koutou katoa, to be able to awhi and support where we can.
Have any people or groups been particularly affected by the cyclone?
Yes, we've had marae that have been wiped out. We've had whānau who have been displaced, 10,000 whānau displaced. No homes, their whenua has been wiped out. We've had communities that are disconnected. You know, I'm not sure if you have watched Te Ao Pe Whairangi and his YY35 campaign, where he says, don't forget about us. And he walked the Highway 35 that connects all the whānau, hapū and iwi of Ngāti Porou, and you could actually see.
And I guess just reflecting on the devastation that we're seeing in the wake of the cyclone, I guess I'm just wondering, do incidents like these call for stronger climate policy?
As you can see in Fire Debbie's Herald article, you know, Te Pāti Māori have been pushing the government at the last election in 2020 around their preparedness for climate change. And actually it's been pushed at a policy level for the government to be more prepared. We've been warning the government of these changes. Like, we've known, and there's been kōrero for a long, long time about climate change, but nothing has been done about it. And now we're having to backtrack. Now the government is backtracking. So there's money being dropped, you know, to these areas because they need drastic support. But there could have been more mahi done prior to this event. And we know that there's going to be more to come. Te Pāti Māori has made a call for the government to, you know, change the policy, to amend this policy, review it, because now we are dealing with the loss of whakapapa, the loss of whenua. You know, that's sad to see for us as Māori.
What policy alternatives is Te Pāti Māori offering?
Let me go back to Fire Debbie's. She reminds government of the climate policy and called to the Crown about having whānau, hapū and iwi, involved in the decision-making around the climate changes of their communities. We've been, we've predicted that there was going to be a change, but nothing came about of it. So Te Pāti Māori, being the only party in the 2020 election, saw the foresight and vision and urged government to prepare. There were two things, actually, that Te Pāti Māori called for. So climate policy needed to include whānau, hapū and iwi, who were hit the hardest during the cyclone, and we actually have our own solutions. We know our community, we know our whenua, we know what needs to change to be able to improve the climate change policy in our local community. You know, if we have Indigenous models, we have our own maramataka that our tūpuna use to be able to show us how to live off the whenua, live off on around the moana, to plant, to grow. And we knew those things, and we used the maramataka to be able to guide us on those principles pre-colonisation. But now we don't have, now we're going back to that. It's time for us to bring those solutions back and to understand how we can continue to nourish and feed our whānau. Yeah, mm-hmm. We have our solutions, but that, you know, when we say what's good for Māori is good for all, mm-hmm. Yeah, and we truly believe that and feel that. So the Te Pāti Māori want to establish a $1 million Māori Taiao Relief Fund. Te Pāti Māori want to allocate an additional $100 million to fund a Māori National Service Defence Framework.
You mentioned earlier that Te Pāti Māori is the only party in Parliament that's kind of floating these sorts of policies. I guess, does this point to a need to centre Indigenous voices in climate policy if this is something that only Te Pāti Māori is bringing to the table?
Yes, we need to bring collective Indigenous voices to the table. We have experts in Māoridom who are leaders of Mātauranga Māori around climate change. They need to be brought in to this collaborative network. We're now in a time where we're scrambling, we're picking up, but it's such drastic loss of life. This could have been prevented.
Onto the Māori Adaptation Fund that was mentioned in that article. Why do we need specific provision for Māori if climate change is an issue that affects everyone?
Again, it's around, you know, Māori are impacted the most. We have majority of our whānau, kuia, disabled, lower socioeconomic whānau. No insurance. The cost of living is high. We can't replenish what we've just lost. And so there's got to be another mechanism to be able to take care of that. Māori do not have insurance. Majority of Māori do not have insurance. Or those that do, they can't afford the excess. So we need to fight. We need to find another mechanism. The other thing is, marae have shown a response. And we've seen that in the event of COVID, where marae stood up. They are their own central hub for emergency services, emergency response. And as marae, we can be the central location for communities, whether we're rural or urban, as a place for all whānau to come, not just Māori, but all. And we've shown that through COVID, that we're able to set up service within 24 hours, respond. We're able to wrap services around whānau. We're able to find resource. We can provide kai, shelter. We're able to bring in government agencies that can work in partnership with us to be able to meet the needs of whānau.
And for the Crown collaborating with Hapu and Iwi to establish climate adaptation plans, is this something like co-design of policy?
There's always a space for co-design. Whānau voice is instrumental. A lot of our whānau, like if you go and talk to those whānau that were impacted by Cyclone Gabriel, they'll be able to tell you, we've been seeing this, we've seen it.
And I guess, is there some sort of like almost spiritual harm that carries with climate change that's not really, doesn't really feature in a lot of mainstream climate discussions?
Yeah, I was just thinking of a whakatauki, ma wiwi whenua, ma wiwi tangata. When the land is sick, the people are sick. We use that, you know, to be able to describe how what we see, hear and feel when we're out on our whenua. So if you think about Cyclone Gabriel and what it's done to the rivers, you know, it's washed them away, to the roads, it's washed those away. So we're not connected anymore. Everything is about being connected and about energy and emotion. For us, it's about that spiritual connectedness to things such as the water. Like I was saying before, it's not just that we see a river and hop in. There's actually a connectedness. That's where we used to go to have karakia, to bless whenua, to cleanse away, you know, different things. But we definitely have a spiritual connectedness to our whakapapa, to our whenua.
And that was Te Pāti Māori's Takutai Kemp.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēne wiki ni te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki o mō tēne rā. That's a wrap on the Monday Wire. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today. Ex Karen Chua, Te Pāti Māori's Takutai Kemp, Sama Hiruai Seja from the Aotearoa Liberation League, Hibiscus and Bay's local board member Jake Law, and Tutira Mai Relief Concert volunteer Lewis Johnson. Nira hoki te mihi ki a koutou I whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM. Next up is the 1 to 4 with Jules.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.